Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Business from the Bass Boat Podcast on the Serious Angler Network, presented by RecLending.com. And guys, today, great show lined up. I hope everyone is enjoying the month of April into May here. We are talking about bass fishing. Just a hard to beat a better time, honestly, in 90% of the country. It is the bass fishing month, in my opinion. Just a lot of quality fishing. Fish are moving to the bank, or they are on the bank, or working the way off the bank. They're in that spawn pre-post area. So hopefully folks are out enjoying that. Today's interview is one of my favorite guys to get on, Mr. Todd with RecLending.com. And we always end up going down some rabbit hole regarding dealers and what we're seeing in the boating industry and the bass boat industry and interest rates and all kinds of stuff, nerd out on when it comes to the business side of the fishing industry. So without further ado, let's bring Mr. Todd in from brand new office. How's it going, Todd?
Brand new office. Yeah, lots of changes since we talked last time. How you been?
Good, man. Good. I can't complain one bit. Just working a lot, fishing when I can, and cranking out podcasts and doing everything we can on the Serious Angler Media side.
Good. You were right. It is the time of the year. I mean, they're eating. Yeah, it's just so much fun. Can't wait till they start spawning. The smallmouth start spawning up here. So, a couple more weeks, three, four.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how far are we away from that? About a month out.
Yeah, we call it Spawn Fest, where we go up north and spend a week or so up there just poking around, is the third week in May. So yeah. We'll be close. Should be close. Sure.
Very good. Got it. Okay.
Where you been fishing?
Man, locally, everything in Idaho so far has been fairly local. I am headed to, let's see, my next one. I've got the next four weekends in a row I'm fishing local tournaments here. And then this is a unique one. You'll maybe like this. So the lake right here south of Boise is called CJ Strike. It's got largemouth and smallmouth in it. And this is again, I'm new to this local scene completely and fishing these tournaments, but they have an event that's fairly unique called the Boger Big Bass or something Boger tournament. It's a regular tournament, but it pays very well for big largemouth and big smallmouth. So it'll be like $6,000 for big largemouth, $4,000 for big smallmouth. And it's a, you know, local weekend tournament. And then there's regular tournament kind of payout associated with it. But it makes it fun because it's like, okay, let's go chase a big green one. And then let's go try and catch a big smallmouth too. So it's a kind of unique to where you see big bass on both species. I thought was kind of fun.
I used to run a derby up at Central Michigan, Wixom Lake, a lake that, it's gone now, the dam broke, but we would do that in the fall, and we'd always have a big largemouth, big smallmouth, and that was the most fun, because even if you were on all smallmouth or all largemouth, at some point in the day, you abandoned them just to go try and catch a big whatever you needed, and you did. It's a twist to a normal game that makes it interesting.
Exactly. Yep. And after that, I'm going to fish the Toyota Series on the Delta in June. So excited to get back out to the California Delta. That place is crazy special.
Yep.
And so looking forward to that one too.
Good. Someday I need to go to the Delta. Never been there. Yeah.
Catch a plane. We'll head out. I'm not now being in Idaho, I think I'm 8 hours, which is still a drive. Don't get me wrong, but we should plan it sometime to where it's after a derby or something. Show you around that place. It's
good.
It is special. But I don't know if you've seen the weights at Clear Lake here lately. The one bass just had a Clear Lake tournament in day one. I don't know if it sniffed. I don't think you sniffed the top tens unless you were in the 30s or the high 20s. It was some just multiple bags in the 30s.
I think Clear Lake is special. I mean, that is just it fishes like a giant gravel pit. And I had a ball. We spent a week out there. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, we'll plan a trip.
No doubt.
Sorry, I didn't dress up, but it's cold here today. So,
oh, you're all good. I'm wearing.
I gotta walk the dog, and oh well.
Still living in the north. Still cold. But tell us a little bit about the new office building. Seeing the social media stuff. Seeing the large space. Man, we were talking a little off air. It's like I can't imagine moving into a new office. As hard as it is to move into a house, I can't imagine like, hey, we need to have these desks for these people and this internet set up. And just my gosh,
it's tantamount to herding cats. Okay. I mean, please, and I got the greatest folks there is, but I mean, you still have to move 25 some people. And in the meantime, in the midst of it, we started up the insurance agency in January. We moved everything here in February, and we moved one other time, and we found that if we pre-did as much as we could do ahead of time, we dragged stuff that we weren't using and didn't need to use at the office over here early, put it in one of the garages, and then just told everybody to stage their office so that on Friday at noon, take your workstation, take your printer, put it in your car, drive it over to the office, put it where you want it, start nesting in your office and hanging what you want on the walls and all the stuff, and then Monday morning come to work, it'll all be plugged in and working. That's the thumbnail version of it. So, to be honest, it really did kind of work that way. We had to change some of the servers around. We had to do some encrypting, even though it was a bank. I mean, it was old stuff. The building used to be a bank, and it was some old stuff. So we had to replace some of that stuff and do some security stuff. But they ran over 9,000 feet of Cat 6 cable. And on Monday morning at 9 o'clock, everybody's working and the phones are working. So I couldn't have asked for, and most of the stuff was done by two of our folks. And James, who happens to be my nephew, and TJ, who is one of our IT guys, and they just worked. I mean, it was cool.
Heck yeah. It's cool that those old bank buildings, I was in an office building one time that was that way and like had a little party room in the vault. You mentioned a bourbon vault, those kinds of things. I love it. I love it.
So there's two vaults upstairs or on the main floor, first floor, there's only one floor, but there's a basement. And the big vault with that giant 6,000 pound plus door or whatever it is, who can say you got a vault door? But there's that one, and then there's the one that they would keep, you know, when there was paper anyway, mortgages and titles and securities, those kind of things. It is right next to it. So I turned the main vault into a bourbon storage, and the vault next to it is the sipping room or the sitting room or room. If you get a chance to come up, you'll dig it. I promise.
What's your bourbon of choice? I'm not a bourbon guy. My dad is, and I was in a wedding this last year where he was a big bourbon guy. So it was a lot of bourbon tasting and that kind of stuff. But what's your drink of choice there?
Well, I'm a weeded bourbon fan. Okay, that's my taste, and probably the best weeded bourbon out there now all come from Buffalo Trace. So you know, Blanton's, Taylor, Pappy's, all of them. Weller. So yeah. If I can stay somewhere in the Buffalo Trace line, I'm happy. So I have a lot of Buffalo Trace stuff. So love it. I do really have some really cool bourbons. So you ever watch the movie The Horse Soldier?
Have not.
It's a story about some Navy SEALs. I think it was either Navy SEALs or Rangers, either one, but they put them on horseback in the middle of the Afghan war because they couldn't get to this warlord. And so they go and they get to this warlord, turn the tide of the Afghan war. And when they retired, they started a distillery. Hmm. So they bought a piece of steel from the World Trade Center to stamp their their label on their bottle is metal.
Wow.
And they, to stamp that, and a cool story anyway, they make a couple of different flavors, I should say, of bourbon, but I'm in a liquor store in Louisville. And yeah. I'm looking at the Horse Soldier bottles, and the guy I'm with looks at me and he goes, grab that bottle. And wish I'd have thought I'd have brought it to you. But I guess every 5,000th bottle, these guys sign it.
No way.
And it was on the shelf in Louisville. And that's just a cool bottle. I mean, for somebody who likes history, and probably one of my favorites. So
yeah, cool message around it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah, good story. It's all about the story, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
Yep.
Well, man, I think I've been excited for this show. We've been kind of tied up and going back and forth schedule wise, and I'm glad to talk about it. But I think something that is that and want to get into the Phoenix Rec Lending financing situation.
Yep.
But maybe right before that, I think we kind of see this. I've seen this trend over the years of kind of watching the fishing industry, the boat industry, the motor industry, dealers. And you see it with vehicle stuff too, but you see kind of rebates, you see in-house financing occurring with different brands and that kind of a thing. And to me, that kind of means when you start to see the 5-7 year warranties on motors, you see a big $5,000 rebates, these types of things, you start to see like, okay, maybe there's a pullback. There's too much inventory in places. Do you agree with that? And then B, what are you seeing in your world and your conversations with dealers and whatnot right now?
Typically, they use a rebate in two ways, in my opinion. It's either to stimulate sales or to correct an inventory issue. And they've got too much in the field or they've got those things out there. So rebates are really – okay, so everyone did a rebate this year so far of one kind or another. What I don't think the average person understands is – and I talked to Gary at Phoenix about this a lot prior to doing the finance stuff, which was a privilege, please. I need to say that. Okay. I mean, and I'm not going to lie to you. I was a nervous wreck over it. I mean, these are friends. I don't want something to go sideways. I don't want somebody to get angry. I don't want somebody to not think we did what we're supposed to do, but it all worked out the way that it was supposed to. And it was a privilege, but the whole time that the reason that started was Skeeter did it, Tracker did it, with all the Ranger Nitro stuff. Camus was doing, I mean, all the major brands were doing something to stimulate stuff. And I think Phoenix felt like it needed to at least have an also ran position. Okay. They had to have something that would put them in the game. The 699 worked really, really well, I think, for everybody involved. But all of a sudden, Skeeter was throwing silly money at it. I mean, right. Silly money at the dealers and the buyers. And that now everybody starts worrying about market share. So am I going to lose this much market share? And how much are you going to spend to not lose it? And lots of conversations. But for an independent builder like Phoenix, it's a completely different animal in terms of a rebate. So that $5,000 comes out of Phoenix's budget, period.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. 200 boats they sell. It's $1 million off the top end. And typically, once you start that, it's kind of a slippery slope. The folks will look for it all the time. The 5-year and 7-year extended warranties, that kind of stuff. It became, they expected it. So I was really surprised to see them do it. I'm glad in the way that they're doing it, because they're being very forthright with all their dealers and how they're taking it there. So I hope it stirs stuff up for them. I really do. Gary was actually, he wanted to be with us today, but but he's on a plane. He got called out somewhere, but he's on a plane in Florida. But I was anxious to hear, I was anxious for you to hear how nervous he was to make that decision. But
yeah,
their dealers were absolutely wonderful to us. Their customers were absolutely wonderful to us. And we did a lot of business. I mean, we at least helped stir it up a little bit. So no, we're proud to have been a piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how does that come about, I guess, on the back end? I mean, I guess, I think if I'm understanding and hearing you correctly, obviously when you have a brand like a Skeeter who's owned by Yamaha, you have Tracker owned by Johnny Morris, Bass Pro Shops, all of this, like these are very deep pocket brands because of the brands backing behind them. So they may have like a Ford truck, Ford financing involved, right? Yep. GMC financing involved. Yeah. Right, right. Yep. An in-house kind of situation. Is that kind of what started that with some of those rates? And then how did Rec Lending get involved with Phoenix to offer
the rate stuff? I don't, in all the programs that were out there, Camus had one, Skeeter had one, Tracker had one. As we followed them and watched them, they were all smoke and mirror stuff. You know, you can have 499 for 84 months, and then after 84 months, it reversed to 999 or whatever. Oh, really? And it was, I don't know. To me, it was disingenuous. So Gary had called me. Jody and I were up north, and Gary had called me. It was a Monday. They just had their rep meeting. And, you know, I've known Gary a long time, and I've never heard him as nervous as he seemed to be on that one. His reps were telling him that they were losing market share and things were getting stirred up, and he just wanted to know if there's anything that we could do. So, of course, you know, I go to all the banks and go to all the lenders, and we start negotiating and talking to everyone you got to talk to and all the people and getting it down. And it just, banks, it's just not typical for a small lender like, or for a small manufacturer like Phoenix to be able to support that. So
100%.
Literally the lenders who come to me and say, we can do this, or you can buy this down, or you can do this, but we want to guarantee $25 million of the business or $50 million of the business, or, you know, I mean, big numbers. And it's not that I was afraid of it, because if they'd let me open it up a little bit, we could do a few used boats for those dealers and just kind of tuck it in there and bash it a little bit. But I could never get anybody to just finally pin it down. Finally, we found this one little lender out of Central Ohio, and they wanted the business. And I committed to doing the promotion with them on a Friday and backed out on Monday.
Really?
I was so nervous about it. I mean, Jody and I talked about it all weekend long and kept thinking, man, because one misstep with this, and now I've made someone angry to a brand that I didn't mean to. I mean, that had nothing to do with it. Or I'm taking business away from a dealer, and now they get out there on social media and they say stuff about Phoenix is undercutting their dealers or taking money out of their dealers. But I did not want that. Sure. And so I backed out on Monday. So Monday afternoon, Gary called me, and he had everybody in the room and asked me what the issue was. And I was just honest with him. And he said, look, I didn't know it, but I did know it, but I didn't realize he was using it as a test. But he'd sent me a dealer that needed to have his personal boat done. And so the dealer that we got it all done in a couple of days, and he got to go fish. He had to have the boat registered, paid for and registered by Thursday of that week. And wow. I got him on Friday the week before. And he had a derby, and he had to own the boat and had to be registered and titled in his name. And we got it done. And Gary says, you know, he said, you did a great job with them. If you just do that with everyone that calls you, he said, I'm tickled. I'm happy. I said, okay. So we did it. And the phone started ringing right away. I mean, literally right away. We're in the middle of a move. I mean, I've got piece of computer all over the desk, and I sat here the first night that they opened it up and answered my cell phone till about 8:30 that night.
Oh my gosh.
And I talked to dealers from California, oh gosh, Mississippi, Louisiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota, of course the Michigan dealers. They just called and they sat down with all the salespeople and I said, here's the way I want to approach it. Because nobody was making any money on this. Okay. Period. I mean, there was no back end money. They weren't making me pay for the rate, but they weren't going to pay us for the loans like they typically do. Okay. It was altruistic on Phoenix's and my part, but it was good for our industry. So I sat the whole sales staff down and I said, look, if we're going to do this, we don't want to hurt the dealers. Okay. I didn't want to take any money out of dealers' hand. I said, so if.
Explain that a little bit, Todd, as far as taking money out of dealers' hands. What does that mean?
So if a dealer has an in-house finance department, that's a source of income for them. Okay. So that's money and profit coming into the dealership. So not only does the finance guy not get paid, but the dealer doesn't make any money either. And that makes for bad blood. And I just don't want that. I mean, right. When we started this, it was to help the dealers, not to hurt them. And I didn't want that. So I told all salespeople, I said, when you get a deal, I want you to call the dealer and talk to their finance person, talk to whoever it is, find out what lenders they have, find out what they're doing, if they're doing anything, and see if we can't coach them through this deal, either doing it themselves or we'll do it for them. And probably half of the deals that we did, we turned back to the dealer and told them, because some of the bank programs are their finance programs are complicated. So that you have to have a loan to value of this percentage. It has to go, you have to have this kind of term, have to have this much money down. It's this matrix that comes together to get to the lowest interest rate. Okay. So there were several of the dealers that they could beat the 699. They just didn't know how. And so we taught them. And to be honest, we ended up with 8 or 9 brand new dealers out of it. And there have been good relationships. We probably, because there's a lot of dealers out there that don't have anything. They have one little bank in town that they do it with, or there are several of them that just give the dealer or give the customer a purchase agreement, say, go get your money. I don't know why, but
right.
We were able to help them. Okay. And we probably did, I think the last count, we did 45 or 50, close to 50 anyway, new Phoenixes, but we also it kind of grows, but you know, man, I had a problem. I couldn't get this guy done and on this boat, and I've been working on it for 2 weeks. Can you help with it? We did a lot of that stuff too in outside of the program. So it was really beneficial.
That's great.
My son, Cody, we kind of argued about it a little bit. And he's their general sales manager. So he kind of oversees all the stuff. And he didn't know if it was even worth doing. And finally, I just told him that we're going to do it and we'll see what happens. And on Tuesday of the first week, he came to my office, sat down. He says, you win. You're right. So, and when your oldest son can tell you you're right, we're there. So,
yeah, that's a good way to. Well, I think I guess the moral of that one to me is like, you felt like it was a win for the industry. And you felt like even coaching these dealers to offer a better product to people. I mean, if you're a dealer and you only are, if you're not offering financing, or if you're offering financing with the one bank in town, to me, you're losing or the customer, unless they have the person coming to them or a rec lending situation, they're at a disadvantage if there's only one local bank that's doing this one type of program.
There are so many more of those than you know.
Really?
Yeah.
What percentage of dealers would you say have their own financing department?
Probably 20. Basketball world, probably 20%, 25%. I mean, we're all good old boys, and they think that they can just, like, you know, and the banks take advantage of that, and the lenders take advantage of that. And half of my job is just understanding how to get a boat deal done. And I don't know. I think we're pretty good at teaching them. At least the ones that we've taught for the past couple of months, I'm proud of.
Well, I guess with all that, kind of like the whole Cody saying, hey, is this really worth it? Versus you're just like, let's just see this process through. You've said it's created more dealers, more business down the line. Like, this was to be a long-term play, right? Like, just treating people right.
That's what it had to be.
You know, like, this isn't a money grab. We're not making any money on this, but down the line, we're showing we are doing good, and the universe will return us with good. Like, that's kind of the way I'm doing this.
In my opinion, I had this conversation with all the sales staff, is that this will be good for us sooner or later. And the chance of it being just a leg up for everyone involved, Phoenix, us, the industry, that who knows, but we had to take the long view of it. You had to look down the road, and even if we don't get anything else out of it at this point, I think we did good, and that's all you can do. That's all you can ask for, right?
No doubt. Exactly. That's great. I mean, it's just cool to see how those kind of stories come about and what comes about with them. And then, like we kind of talked about now, Phoenix offering a $5,000 rebate, something that I haven't seen in a long time from bass boats, especially, like you said, smaller companies from the standpoint of in-house single brand, right? Brands like a Phoenix. This stuff is super intriguing to me. What is your take on inventory levels, guys selling boats at dealerships? What kind of headwinds are being faced right now? You know, this is something that we try and get on with you at least quarterly to say, hey, what are you seeing? That kind of a thing for folks.
I think the first quarter, from a sales standpoint and from a interest standpoint, was pretty good. We had a couple of the early boat shows were just not good, but after the 1st of February, it seemed to kind of pan out and stir up. So I think here's if I were buying a boat, here's why I buy a boat now.
Okay.
Interest rates suck. Okay. And until we get a new administration or a new look at a new eye on the economy, I don't think it's going to change. I think it's the good, they need to quit spending money. But so what does that do? Well, for the first time in the past 5 or 6 years, dealers are negotiating. Okay. For the first time in 5 years, you've got rebates, or you've got bonus monies, or you've got extra dollars that'll come off of there for whatever you want to use it for. You know, you use it for electronics or down payment or however you want to use it. But so in my opinion, regardless of rate, the boats are cheaper than they've ever been. And a year from now, I can't fix the price of a boat. I can't change it. A year from now, I can change the interest rate. And we've talked about the refinance thing significantly. And I think if folks just look at it and say, gosh, I'm buying this boat for 10 grand less than I would have bought it for 3 years ago, but my interest rate's a little higher. Interest rate's temporary. The cost of that boat's not. And I think that's starting to resonate and resonate with folks. And I think they're starting to put the math together. And yeah, so far so good. It slowed down a little bit about mid-April, last couple of weeks, but this time of the year it's weather driven. So as the storms roll across the United States and the temperatures drop and bottom out, you see our app count for the day goes down when the temperature goes down, and when the temperature goes up, the app count goes up. That's to be expected. I mean, I haven't thought about being in my boat all day at 35 degrees.
Right.
So about it, when it's 70, I'm going, geez, why am I here? So,
right. That's crazy. I mean, it makes sense to me. It's tied to the weather on applications. That's hilarious.
My, uh, I'm glad to see that some of the dealer failures have begun to slow down. I think everybody's kind of settling into a groove, and a big piece of it, I think that the dealers were, I think they got, I call it the COVID hangover, but I think they got used to a certain margin. I think they were used to being flush with cash, and I feel like we're getting back to normal. So find those boats that are non-current, find those leftover boats, and they'll make a deal. I know they will. So,
yeah, I think that's great advice. And I'm glad to hear that you feel like stuff's kind of balancing out with the dealers that maybe were overstocked, or some that have gone away because of issues there. But it seems like things are, I don't know, getting back to a healthier place in your eyes.
Yep. We needed some kind of, it needed to level out. I mean, it was very skewed for the past 3 or 4 years. And I think it's settling out. So
that's good. That's good.
Yep.
Awesome. Now, as far as interest rates go, they've kind of hung, right? They're kind of, there's talks of rate cuts. I don't know what is going to happen with the May situation, but they've kind of just hung at this higher level, right? I don't know if we'll ever get back to the times where we saw fantastic, super low rates, but what is your take? I know currently, and then do you see the Feds cutting kind of stuff? And no crystal ball, obviously.
I did 3 months ago, but that's when, I mean, let's face it, they weren't spending silly money on everything other than us. And now they are. And it's all about how much about the deficit spending, in my opinion. And okay, my God, they just can't quit spending. And they're not, the difference is they're not spending the money at home. So it's not finding its way back into the economy, which would help everyone. But I don't know. To be honest, if we see a rate cut this year, I think I'm going to be surprised.
Wow.
I mean, I really think if we make it through May and they don't raise it, I think we should consider that a win. So, I mean, inflation is
still pumping.
I mean, my bills are still going up. I mean, yeah, nothing's getting cheaper. So, not that I can see anyway, but it's not the end of the world, and it's not the first time it's happened. This is pretty cyclic, and I think truly we need a change with the folks that run our country. And I'm not going to say one's better than another, but a change. People need to have something to look forward to. They need to see that it's somebody else is addressing it. And hey, we'll see.
Yeah. No. I don't think that's a bad sentiment at all. And it's just always interesting to me when you talk Fed stuff, because any additional, you know, deficit and spending, it just is all, there's more of a, it just duplicates and quadruples and everything else because the rates are higher, right? Like the Feds are paying interest on everything. So to me, I've always kind of viewed that like,
they dumped all that money in bonds, and now the bond market's tanked. So now they're paying more in interest than they. It's just so complicated that. But I don't know as we've got anybody in there that actually understands it. I really don't.
It's so complicated. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. No, I'm with you. The politics stuff.
I could get on a soapbox about that, but I'm not going to. Okay.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I guess on another note, talking boats, boat pricing, right, has always been, you just kind of see this trajectory of boat prices going up and up. And we're seeing now more than ever technology and the amount of graphs that we're sticking onto boats and power poles and everything else. It's all a lot. It's ridiculous, right? Like from where a boat, a base model boat to then loading it with the equipment that we're putting on boats now, to me, that delta just keeps spreading. Like, there's just more and more we're adding to boats, and you kind of see the debates of forward-facing sonar, all this stuff in the future. How does that all work from the financing perspective of, well, of electronics and stuff when it comes to adding potential stuff or getting a boat and loading it up, and now instead of this worth boat being worth $70,000, it's worth $95,000 because of all the graphs and whatnot. Yeah,
the electronics now are 25 or 30% of the purchase price in most boats. And 5 years ago or 6 years ago, it was 5 or 6 or 10%. And in the lenders adapted pretty quickly. It used to be they would do an invoice, they would finance the invoice amount plus add-ons up to 10%. So if the boat had an invoice of $80,000, you could put $8,000 with electronics on it, and that was it. Rest of it comes out of pocket.
That's two graphs now, Todd.
Oh, Lord, yeah. I mean, and no power poles. No hydraulic plate. Yeah. I mean, so I think over the, not just us, but a lot of the industry folks, if we've been trying to educate the lenders on what it is that the guy's buying. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just because he's got an $80,000 boat and puts $20,000 worth of electronics on it doesn't mean that it's still worth $80,000. I mean, all he's done is increase the value of the boat and his position in the boat and what the boat is worth. And it took a while to get into that, but they're a whole lot more flexible with it now. So typically we tell the folks to a couple of things. You put on it what you want. Lots of folks will come to us and say, well, I've already bought my electronics. So I spent 10 grand and bought these two graphs that were on sale there and this and that. And what most of them don't understand is anything that you spend that ups the value of that boat's down payment. So the guys freak out and say, well, I don't have 10 grand to put down, but I bought all my graphs for $15,000. And that counts. So we have to not only educate a lot of the lenders about this stuff, but the folks buying it too. So
that counts as part of your down payment, is what you're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely. You spent money.
Adding value to the boat.
Exactly. You spent money and increased the value of the collateral. And that's down payment, period. Okay. And so, but now that they're starting to understand that stuff, and a lot of the guys are doing that. A lot of the guys, I mean, Cabela's has a special on graphs. I mean, we'll see guys go down and buy their four graphs and take them to the dealer to get installed or some custom place to get them installed. And
sure,
you just got to educate them on it. And we try to.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you see that plenty of times as far as, like you said, big box stores, especially it seems like out here, Scheels, Cabela's, you'll see like a big sale on like just, yep, they're overstocked on Garmin or whatever it may be. And it's like, wow, these are some pretty good deals on some graphs. And I think that's a great idea as far as just buying that when you see a deal, because if you're buying it from dealer and factory and everything else, you're generally paying full price, right? When it comes to marine electronics.
And most of the dealers can't buy enough volume to get the price down. And I know a lot of dealers that Cabela's has their price, has their sale, will go to Cabela's and buy everything off the shelf
because it's cheaper
than they can buy it for. So, I mean, there are a few big players. There's a few big players, but not many. I mean, some of the electronics specialty install places now. That'll be a deal one day. You watch that. That's going to be a whole new part of this industry. It is now, but
it's
going to be. It'll be so much more prevalent. It lets the dealer not have to stock, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in electronics that get old in 6 months. But it also means that the dealer doesn't have that kid who could not only program it all, but wire it all and install it all and make it all work. One person can do, or a company can do that, and saves them a warranty, saves them all that stuff. So that'll be a thing.
And I don't know why I hadn't thought of this before, but I've had lots of those type folks on the show, right? That are electronic, yep, specific installers. Yeah, they teach electronic classes, and you see a ton of them, right? Yep. But I hadn't thought about it, because I've thought about that too, just personally and talking with friends on different things. Like, I've got a friend that is very good at that stuff, and I'm like, you need to start this right now, because I see the benefit. But I didn't think about it from the dealer's perspective, because you always hear of folks getting a brand new $100,000 boat and it's wired incorrectly. The live scope is not set up correctly, this or that. There are so many variables with that stuff. And I totally agree. If you're a dealer and you can hand that off, so you see a electronic specialty service that is, you know, managing all of these different dealers' boats that are coming in.
Yep.
Right. You're taking away, you're putting an expert in that role, and you handle the dealer stuff, the boat stuff, the sales, all that. We'll deal with the electronics. And I mean, I like that thought process.
Think how big of a headache. I was at a dealer for a long time. Think how big a headache improperly installed anything is to a dealer. The phone calls, the anger, the disappointment, the just disrupting his fishing season. And if you can take that away, now the entire sale can be a pristine, wonderful experience. And then the electronics can be a separate experience completely, which in most of the cases are really good, because these guys are good at what they do. And they're 20 somethings that are amazing. I can see that trending early again. I got the young man that does my boat, and he's brilliant. I mean, he's just brilliant. One of those kids that you can call from the lake and say, hey, this just did this. He goes, well, go in, push that, do that, change that to this. Yeah. Okay. I told him the same thing. I said, that's going to be the trend. And get ready.
I like it. I like it. Man, you've got my entrepreneurial mind spinning right now. So I like the thought process there. And I'm sure folks listening to the show are like thinking kind of the same way that are, anyways, list traditional Business from the Bass Boat listeners always thinking outside the box when it comes to business stuff.
Identifying an issue and solving a problem. And that we know every dealer out there knows it's an issue. Every dealer knows that it's a problem. And the solution is let a professional do it. It's like finance. Everybody knows how to do finance, thinks they know how to do finance.
Until most of the time,
they mess it up. But
so I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. And I feel like there's enough markets out there where there's good dealer networks in the same area, right? Like competitive dealers, this one here, this one here, this one there. And then obviously you have all the different brands. Not every dealer has all the boat brands in their house, generally speaking. And so you kind of could get an array from that perspective.
Well, what's that say to the customer that we're going to have your boat professionally done? We're not going to do it. We don't know as much as these guys do. I mean, not only is that humble, but that's probably the best thing for your customer. So I'm not sure there'd be any pushback on that at all. I really don't. I mean, a good tech costs a guy $60,000-$80,000 a year, plus the mistakes, plus the redos, plus the
liability of just having to fix all that stuff and take time on. Yeah.
And stocking it, having all the right cords and having all the right, you know, nuts and bolts. I mean, that stuff is
transducers.
Oh yeah.
And then I think the other hard part is to change it, right? Like how often, I think what drives to the benefit of the industry in a lot of ways, and I'm curious to see how this changes, if there is any sort of limitation on technology. But I feel like what drives a lot of boat sales outright is technology being outdated. There's a lot of people that would rather than, and I'm thinking about it right now with my Phoenix, is it's like, could I change graphs out? Yes. And I've done that and have develop the skills to do that stuff. But I also think to myself, it's a lot easier to get a new boat, have it set up how I want it with the new graphs. You know what I mean? And you kind of see this continual rotation of guys flipping boats because of many factors, but one of them being technology.
I think the other part of it is, I think from a technology standpoint or from an electronic standpoint, is that on those retrofits or those refits that they'll do on the, on a 2-year-old boat or a 5-year-old boat or a 10-year-old boat, that's a complete, there's somebody out there to buy that used LSV 32, mm-hmm, or, you know, a 2-year-old fish finder. He can't, I mean, so I think it'll open up a whole lot.
Way more than I ever thought, Todd. Like, oh, I always thought, like, oh, you know, these graphs, I'm not going to be able to, like, you post a graph for sale that I feel like is like, well, it's kind of outdated, there's new things, whatever, like, boom, sold immediately. Like, a lot of people that are like, hey, this, and it's, and they're solid products. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
I mean, just because
you're only gaining a little amount.
You and I have the most updated stuff because we can. And not everybody gets to, and not everybody knows the difference between last year's live scope or 2 years ago live scope and this year's live scope or active target or the difference between 360 and mega 360. I mean, that not everybody knows that. So, your dog. Dexter, he's say hi.
What's up, buddy? Got a dog on the show. Love it. What kind of dog is that? Baxter, is that his name?
He's a golden doodle.
Golden doodle. That's
fantastic. Come up here. Say hi. Come on, say hi.
Say hi. Look at him. You got the head. I love it.
No, he's my bud. He's came to the office with me since he was a puppy every day. So
no way. Office dog.
Yep.
That's
what about the we're dog and child? So there's 4 dogs or 5 dogs in here every day and kids all over the place. So
that is so cool, man. What a cool culture.
Yeah.
Will you bring him on the boat at all?
I used to. I don't anymore. First off, I can't keep him in the boat. He's a water dog and he's 120 pounds and I can't pick him up and put him back in the boat anymore.
Yeah.
So I'll take him to the lake and let him throw a stick for him, try to keep him away from the birds because they'll chase the ducks and the swans and the geese. But no, he's 10 years old now too, so he's not as spry as he once was. So, but he loves to swim. The minute I get the pool open, he's done. You got to swim every day. So,
yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Todd, I think to wrap things up, I think you've kind of started down the road of advice to consumers currently looking at boats and that sort of a thing. What other advice do you have for folks as we are approaching, I mean, peak boating season, spring season? Obviously, you kind of have the boat shows at the beginning of the year, and then you kind of have additional shows spread out throughout. And in the fall, when kind of new models in 2025, we had the Classic, of course. What do you have advice for a consumer that's maybe looking at a new boat or potentially a used boat going into the spring season here?
Well, the cycle I typically see is the pre-season cycle where everybody's looking to buy them. And then the post-season, and I don't mean post, I mean after the season has started. Because, I mean, you get out and you find this went wrong with your boat or that went wrong with your boat or the buddy that you hang out with at the Derby's got a brand new boat. And all of a sudden you're thinking about that. So as you do that coming into the season, I think understand a couple of things. There's some dynamics. So the new model year comes out end of June, 1st of July. So the dealers are trying desperately to get that inventory as low as they can. So the longer you wait into the season, you may be hindered by what models are available or what colors are available, but the dealers are anxious to move that. I think they've begun to pay interest on the inventory now. So that boat's costing, we've had the interest in floor plan cost conversation many times, but it's starting to cost the dealer money. So
right at this point,
it's a that's a real negotiation piece. And I'm not saying that as a to dunk the dealers, because every one of the dealers will tell you the exact same thing. I need to move this boat. What do I need to do to move it? And from a rate standpoint, if I had a crystal ball, it'd be black right now, because I don't have a clue what it's going to do. All I can say is anyway, it's temporary and we'll fix it. But good. I don't know. But look, we're still going to fish. I mean, whether it means you sit on your boat for another year, or instead of a brand new, when you buy a used one or whatever it happens to be, find out what fits for you. And 90% of what they'll let me do anymore is have this conversation with folks that just have questions. You know, I'm looking at this boat. What will my payment be? I really tried to be here. What do you think of this boat? Because it's this much more money, or all of those things. I don't mind having that conversation. I mean, there's not many of the boats out there I haven't drove, ran, or wrecked. And I'll give you an honest opinion, and you do with it what you will. And there's no strings attached. If we finance it for you, that's cool. If we don't, that's cool. I mean, all I want to do is perpetuate the industry and perpetuate the goodwill. Because we've got, let's face it, from a fisherman or from a person standpoint, we got the best people in the industry. You know we do. I mean, in the boating industry. I mean, nobody understands us, but who cares,
right? We all get each other. Yeah. I like it, man. I think it's just good people, and I like the sentiment about no strings attached. Never a bad idea to give Rec Lending a call and talk about a potential, right? Like, it doesn't have to be, this is the boat, this is what I'm doing. Of course, those are great situations, but have the conversation. Like, see what makes sense for you individually, and take
people's opinions. We can do a soft pull. We can look at what your credit looks like. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to be charged against you. But we can have a legitimate conversation about buying this boat, it'd look like this. Buying this boat, it'd look like that. If you did this, it might change it to that. The more people know and the more educated they are, the better it is for everybody, and the better experience the customer has after he's bought it and during the process. And that, if I think ultimately that's our goal.
I like it. Well, folks, I think that's a great way to kind of wrap things up as far as advice for people into the spring season. Well, Todd, I hope I get some pictures of, especially in about a month from now, of your big trip up north, going and catching great big brown ones. And I wish you the best this spring, and just hope you can get out on the water, chase some stuff around.
Thank you. We're going to need to make a fall plan for you and I.
I think that's what we need to start planning. Is like spring,
because I think it might be more fun than you think.
Yeah. And I'm okay with fights and weather. I'm okay with that.
In the fall, I don't care how cold it is. Spring, that's a different story. But
I agree.
Fall, for whatever reason, I'm ready for it.
I think so, too. I think that's like, I think it's probably because it's the tail end, right? Like, you know, in the spring, there's better days ahead. So it's like, do I need to go out and freeze my butt off? No. But in the fall, it's like, hey, I don't know how many more of these days I can actually get out.
Yeah.
So yep. I better especially go now,
because in our neck of the woods.
Right. It's going to be ice. Like, it's either like we go now, or we may have another couple of days.
Maybe.
Oh.
No, we really need to do that. I mean, I love fishing in the fall anyway, just because there's so much less going on for me, and I can kind of focus on it a little bit. So you get a wild hair and you find some place you want to go, we'll make it work.
Okay. Let's do it, Todd. Okay. Seriously. I'm going to put that on my to-do list as far as things to plan this summer. So I like it. All right, man.
Thank you again. If there's anything you need, holler. And same for the folks. If there's anything I could do, just call and they'll get you to me. I promise.
No doubt about it. And folks, as always, the Rec Lending website is in the links on all of our show descriptions. So feel free to scroll down, click through that link, and give you direct access to the website, phone numbers, all of that. And they're good people. Give them a call, reach out. A lot easier. In today's age, it is so hard to get people on the phone to chat with. And I think that's something you guys do a really good job of. It's just, I'm a phone person, as you're aware. We talk on the phone all the time. I can't stand trying to find a chat bot to talk or ask questions on the internet. So appreciate what you're doing.
Nope. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. We'll see you later. All right, man.